This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gentlemen, we make our triumphant return with trumpets sounding, banners unfurled. The Rob Brown Show is back. It is the final Monday of 2024. We are just days away from turning the page, from moving on into 2025. But we spend just a few more days right here in 2024, a few more days before we move on ever forward. It's good to be back. Had a nice little Christmas vacation, not that any of you asked, but if you did, I would tell you it was spectacular, my dudes and dudettes. We had a wonderful time, spent some time with La Familia, which was fantastic. Had a lovely time with some friends and family from different parts of the country. Everything went exceptionally well, but it's good to be back. It's good to be back in the saddle one more time again. It's good to be back because we have got a billion and a half things that we need to talk about today. And we will as we get all caught up. The great one Lonzo out today because he, as the very special boy that he is, gets 19 weeks of vacation a year. And he's using his last week of 2024 vacation today. So what do you get? You get Rob Brown. You get my guy Ben sitting in with us today. How you doing, big fella? How's life in the fast lane? How was your vacation?
Life in the fast lane. It's great.
I'm glad to hear it, man. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to have you with us. I'm glad to hear all of you or have all of you wonderful people with us today as we are set to just kick butt, take names throughout the course of the day. It is going to be a good one because we have got obviously a metric buttload of college football that we have got to talk about. Our college football playoffs, I have not been with you since round one of the college football playoffs concluded, and you had better bet your sweet patootie that I've got thoughts, that I've got things to get to talk about today. That's coming down the pipe. We got to get to the National Football League. Why? Because there is drama down the stretch. There's also a lot of real bad football taking place in the NFL right now. But, you know, this is one of those things. I had this conversation on Bet for the Cycle on Saturday when I said, look, I don't know what you expect. Of course, there's going to be a lot of bad football. A lot of teams have shut it down because what has Rob Brown told you for many, many moons as the host of this and other shows around these great continental United States? What I have told you is this. Players will not tank because players are playing for their livelihood. Coaches will not tank because coaches are coaching for their livelihood. But general managers will tank. Owners will tank. People in charge of football teams will tank. And they will tank because it's better for the team if you do. You don't have to like it. You do have to recognize that it is a true thing. It does not matter how you feel about it. It makes sense for a team to tank, it makes sense for a team to get themselves into a position to get a better draft pick. It makes sense for a team to put themselves into a position to get a better player down the stretch. And that is what we are going for here if you are teams like the Carolina Panthers, ladies and gentlemen, who got it procedurally handed to them by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers yesterday. But you should not be surprised by that. That should not have taken you by surprise. You should have seen that coming from a gazillion miles down the pipe, and you should have known that. Should have known that was coming. I wish it was noon. You should have known it was coming. The second that Chuba Hubbard got shut down and put on season-ending injured reserve. See, there's a thing that general managers, even, yes, guys who got that dog in them like a Dan Morgan does, and you know I'm a fan. You know I'm a fan. There's a thing that general managers are wont to do in their responsibilities, and one of those things... One of those things is create a world where the team has the best opportunity to succeed the following year. And the reality is the Carolina Panthers, as they stand right now, winning does nothing. Like, it's not, it's a mentality thing, right? It's a mentality thing. Because if you're a player, if you're a player, if you are a coach, if you are anybody that your job is dependent on being able to point at results and say, hey, look at these results. These results are good. Then, yeah, you're not going to accept the concept of the tank. You're going to say absolutely hell no. But if you're a general manager, your results are not based on the short term. Your results are based on the long term. Your results are based on over the tenure of your regime. What are the results? And for a general manager, it is not measured in wins and losses. I mean, scratch that. It is measured in wins and losses, but it's measured in wins and losses over the long term, not the short term. You're going to get your credit if you go put together a Super Bowl contender or whatever. But when you are being evaluated by owners, when you are being evaluated by people who sign your paychecks, they are looking at the lifetime tenure. And there is some what have you done for me lately on it. But they are looking at the team from the time you took over it to now. And they're saying, what has been the overwhelming positive here? And for a GM, getting the best players you can get into that roster, that's the best thing you can have going for you. So it should not be a surprise, a shock at all to you that Carolina shut down Chuba Hubbard and decided to move on. Decided to go with some backup guys, to give Blackshear his opportunity, to see what's happening, to see what direction you go in. And what's going to happen next? So, yeah, I mean, there was nothing other than, and we'll talk to Rashad Beard about this on Thursday, host of the Carolina Panther Nation podcast. There's nothing short of, oh, well, the players feel good about it. There's nothing short of, oh, well, the fans feel good about it. That would have an impact on Carolina having beat Tampa. I mean, yeah, you change the outcome of the NFC South winner. If Carolina finds a way to beat Tampa yesterday, then you know, it's a little easier for Atlanta. But, like, who the hell cares? Who the hell cares about that? If it ain't you, who cares who wins the division, right? Like, it's one thing to think in terms of a rivalistic? Is that a word? That's not a word. I don't care. I'm sticking with it. A rivalistic mentality. It's one thing to think in terms of a rivalistic mentality when you're a fan. It is a different thing. It is a different thing when you are a GM, when you are a head coach. And I think Carolina was just setting themselves up for a better draft pick. to find out who some of the guys are, to find out where the depth comes from or is going to come from next year. Where is the depth coming from next year? Who are the guys that are going to fill in next year? Who are the guys that are going to be the guys next year if the guy can't go? That was the mentality yesterday. So we'll talk some NFL football later on in the show. We had four blowouts in round one of the college football playoffs. And I have to tell you, there was something for me after games 1, 2, and 3 with all the lower seeds, not just losing those games, but getting absolutely demolished in those games. There was something almost poetic. There was something almost poetic to see the Tennessee Volunteers get absolutely shellacked by the Ohio State Buckeyes. Now, I'm going to tell you, I got everything wrong about the round one games. But you know what? I don't feel bad about it because most everybody did. Most everybody got it wrong. Most everybody got it wrong. Not everybody. Some of you guys called for a couple of blowouts here and there. But we thought they were going to be, at least I thought, they were going to be competitive games. I had Tennessee with an outright upset on the road at Ohio State. They got shellacked. I had SMU falling to Penn State, but like in a good game, they got shellacked. I had Indiana falling to Notre Dame in a good game, but they got shellacked. I mean, everybody got shellacked in round number one. And I want you to know, it does not change anything about how I feel about the playoff selection committee, about the teams that we're in. I still, to this day, despite the shellackings that took place, I feel like the playoff selection committee did a good job. I feel like we had the right 12 teams in. I understand that overall, I thought that we had a good bracket set up, and I think that top to bottom, just because we had the results we had, it does not nullify the accomplishments and the achievements that the teams who got there went through. Now, there is this big conversation taking place right now. There is this big conversation taking place right now around Kirk Herbstreit, and we are going to get into that a little bit later on in the show, because there was a big conversation that took place with Kirk Herbstreit regarding Indiana getting in, whether or not Indiana deserved to get in, regarding SMU and whether or not they deserve to get in or not. And it kind of made me laugh because after the Indiana game and after the SMU game, Herbie was on there on the post-game show talking about how, you know, some of these teams didn't deserve to get in. Well, we went with the most deserving teams, not the best teams. And I know that this is going to put me a little bit at odds with many of you South Carolina fans, because many of you South Carolina fans believe South Carolina should have gotten in as one of the 12 best teams. And Kirk was out there talking about how, you know, Indiana got outclassed and they got destroyed and they shouldn't have not been out on that field. And he said the same thing about SMU. And he said that over and over and over. He said that over and over and over until the point that Tennessee got bagged up. And then once Tennessee got bagged up, then all of the sudden, after Tennessee got bagged up, no longer was it, oh, it was outclassed and it was demoralizing. And all of a sudden, there was grittiness and toughness out there by the Tennessee Volunteers. There was grittiness and there was toughness and it was impressive and it was this and it was that and the other and it was all these different things. And I said on Saturday show, I'm like, you know, doesn't this kind of feel like Kirk? And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Kirk Herbstreit's a good dude. I like him a lot. I've met him multiple times. He's a phenomenal human being. I'm not taking that away from him. But I think it is important to point out. I think it is important to point out that Kirk Herbstreit is getting paid a lot of money from ESPN. He's getting paid a lot of money from the network that props up the SEC. It was amusing to me that when it was SMU and when it was Indiana, when it was other teams, it was all, this is, you know, it's bad and we're not doing it the right way. And yet, when it was Tennessee that got their asses whipped, all of a sudden it was, well, you know, these things just happen. So we're going to address some of the comments that have been made over the past couple of hours, days, last week and a half since round one, and address those. And we'll start breaking down round number two of the college football playoffs, because we are, ladies and dudettes, about 48 hours away from getting those games underway. So we're going to get to that coming up here in just a few minutes from right now, because there is plenty to break down as round two, I think, is where our college football competition is going to get heated up. We're going to talk some NBA later in the show, and coming up at 9:40, well, at 8:40, we got John Blau of the Post and Courier going to join us to talk a little Clemson ball. We will talk to him about exactly what happened with the Clemson Tigers first round game. They got shellacked. Speaking of shellacking, they got shellacked by the Texas Longhorns. We will talk to John Blau about what went wrong for Clemson and where Clemson football is set up for the 2025 season. And coming up at 9:40 a.m., we are going to be joined by All Elite Wrestling's Dax Harwood. Dax is going to join us in the show at 8:40. He'll be live on the stream with us today. The stream, by the way, up and running, facebook.com/TheFanUpstate. The Fan Upstate on YouTube. The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, and on Twitch. We want you to join us there. We're going to get into a little pro wrestling coming up later with Dax Harwood of All Elite Wrestling at 8:40. John Blau of the Post and Courier at 8:40. Dax at 9:40, pardon me. We will talk about all of that and more as the show rolls on. But we are going to talk some college football in hour number one. I want you in touch with the program. We haven't gotten in touch with you guys in a couple of weeks because your boy's been off on vacation, and I'd be lying to tell you I wasn't enjoying the heck out of it, because I absolutely was. But I am glad to be back. I am glad to be in the saddle with you one more time again. I want you as part of the show. 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E, 844-326-3663. That is the number to be a part of the radio program on the show. You can text us, 71307, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the show. You can hit me up on Twitter at The Rob Brown Show, at The Rob Brown Show. You can get at me on the email, rob.brown@thefanupstate.com, rob.brown@thefanupstate.com. But we want you on the phone lines. The Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas Fan Phone, 844-326-3663. Let's run out to a break. When we come back here in just a minute from right now, we will get into college football playoffs round one. I know you've had plenty of time to digest those games. We'll talk about them a little bit, the X's and O's. More importantly, the impact that they will have, if any, on the future of the college football playoffs. I got that coming up for you. We'll set up your round two games. Second half of the show, we'll spend some time doing some NFL. We'll get some NBA in here as well. It's going to be a busy day. We've been gone like a week, y'all. We got plenty to catch up on. My man Ben in for Lonzo. I am Rob Brown. We're back after this on The Rob Brown Show. We're back after this on The Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It's The Fan Upstate. Thanks for being here. Happy Monday, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a week since last we chatted. The last time that we talked, we had not yet played our first round of the college football playoffs. So let us dive right into them. We had effectively four blowouts in the opening round, all four higher seeded, all four home teams took home W's. We had Indiana fall to Notre Dame 27-17 in a game that wasn't that close. Penn State shellacked SMU 38-10. Ohio State whipped Tennessee 42-17. And Texas, two-touchdown Clemson 38-14 in another game that was probably the closest of the first round. If there's any solace for Tiger fans to be taken, it's that at least your game was, for the most part, kind of a game. Like, kind of a game your game was. So that's good news for you. Look, this is what I hammered on Bet for the Cycle on Saturday. This is what I hammered on BetMGM tonight last week when I was on. This is what I have hammered. This is what I will continue to hammer moving forward. What happened in those games is, in my ever so humble opinion, not a reflection on a bad way to handle the college football playoffs. That's not, in my ever so humble opinion, that was not a indication, a reflection on the college football playoff selection committee. It was not a reflection on the process being bad. Like, yeah, man, it was a rough one. It was a rough go. But this is why teams busted so hard to try and get the home game, right? This is why teams will be fighting for the higher seed. This is why teams will be fighting to be at home, because it should work out that way. It should work out that the home teams win more often than they don't. And on top of that, with the exception of the 8-9 game where you have a couple of, you hope, relatively evenly matched teams, you're going to have a couple of teams that are very good taking on a couple of teams that probably aren't as good. I asked this question of every host I have shared the airwaves with over the past couple of weeks. Can you name me a year? Any year, can you name me a year where you genuinely felt like the seventh best team in the final rankings, like the seventh best team in the final rankings were a legitimate, genuine national championship threat? Can you name me a point in time where you genuinely believe that the seventh best team could have defeated the team that went on to win the national championship? Because I got to tell you, I don't think I can. I don't think I went back and looked. I don't think there was a year that I was able to find, at least not with a cursory glance, that I would say team number seven, I think genuinely would have competed with the top two or three teams. That's just college football. Now, if you do it the right way, what you're hoping for is that the playoffs are structured in a way where you're going to get the best teams competing and the best team to win a title. But like, realistically, and I mean this, I will even ask, I will put myself at risk here. Genuine question. South Carolina fans, how many of you genuinely feel like after what you saw this weekend, you would compete with, I don't know, Ohio State in their house or at a neutral site? I mean, I think it might be a game, but Ohio State's a 7-point favorite in that game. 7.5, 8-point favorite in that game. That's not to say you wouldn't win. That's why we play the game. But we are also talking about the ability to do that for a handful of games. And we are on top of that. And this is where the real crux of the conversation comes in. And we're going to address the comments of Kirk Herbstreit later, because my dude has been taking some fire over the past couple of days. In fact, you know what? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go ahead and just jump right into this. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into what Herbie had to say. Because I think it's the best way to frame this conversation. Let's start with what Herb Street said on ESPN in the wake of round one.
That doesn't mean they're one of the 12 best teams. Remember, I know, Linda, I'm not taking this out on you, but there's a big difference between deserving and best.
Yeah.
What this is all about is giving us the best 12 teams. Now, subjective, how you want to figure out the best 12 is up to you, but that's what I want to see. I don't want to hear about wins. How many wins? Winning's obviously important, but just because you have 11 wins doesn't mean you're better than a team that maybe had a tougher road that had 9 wins. So I think we get too caught up in how many wins you have. It's really more about who are the best 12 teams, and we need to get the best 12 teams in this tournament every year.
So I will say this. There is one thing in that comment that Kirk Herbstreit said that I think needs to be addressed. And that one thing is the concept of the best versus the most deserving. That is the argument. Everything that we have discussed so far comes down to the concept of the best versus the most deserving. And let me tell you where I've kind of landed on that part of the discussion. Because again, I think that it is the part of the discussion that causes the most, I don't know, it causes the most debate. I don't think that best and most deserving necessarily need to be separated. I think that most deserving has an implication. And if I'm wrong on any of this, or if you disagree with any of this, the phone line's open at 844-FANFONE. That's 844-326-3663. Most deserving to me is about results. Most deserving is about wins and losses, who you beat, who you lost to, how you beat them, how you lost to them, when you beat them, when you lost to them, where you beat them, where you lost to them. Best comes down to eye test, I think. In the mindset, in the eyes of those who are trying to distinguish those as two different things, I look at them as able to be meshed together. I think that when we say best, we should expand that phrase. It should be best of the full season. When we say most deserving, it should be most deserving based on what they accomplished in the season. And again, Kirk said at the end of that take, he said, look, how you determine best. He said, we should go with best, but how you determine best is subjective. That's what I've been yelling about for a very long time now, not just in the 12-team format. I was making that argument in the 4-team playoffs. How do you arrive at whatever metric you use, best, most deserving, or like me, a combination of both? The reality is this entire discussion is subjective. I don't care if you use the phrase 12 best teams. I don't care if you use the phrase 12 most deserving teams. How you arrive at your 12 is a very subjective measure. And I feel like I'm whipping a dead horse at this point, but I don't care because I'm right about it. Until you come up with an objective way to determine who's in and who's out. This is why when we're having this conversation starts to say, well, the NFL, I don't want to talk about the NFL. And I don't want to talk about the NFL for one reason and one reason alone, because the NFL has an objective way of determining who's in and who is out. You have your four divisional winners. The divisional winner with the best record gets a first round bye and home field through the playoffs. That's your reward. Then you have the next three divisional winners. Those three divisional winners host a home game. The next two divisional winners host a, or next three, you know what I'm saying here. It's an objective metric. The best team gets a bye, and then you have six teams below them in the conference. The top three teams host a home game. The bottom three teams go on a road. If you are the best team in your division, you get an automatic playoff bid. If you are not the best team in your division, but you are one of the best seven teams in your conference, then you get a shot. Now, you may have to go on the road. Hell, you may have to go on the road through the entire playoff run, no matter what happens. But you get a shot. It is objective how they get in. There is a way for college football to become objective. There is a way for college football to have an objective process to determine who gets in. But that objective process would get rid of a lot of the norms and the traditions of college football. And most importantly, it would get away from a lot of the money-making opportunities for the schools and the conferences. And you've seen how hard these schools and these conferences are fighting for their lives. And so if they are fighting for their lives, they are not going to be happy to engage in a world. They are not going to be happy to engage in a world where, even if we come up with an objective way to get teams into the playoffs, they're not going to be able to get to a spot where the conference and the schools are on board with that. So we have to deal in the world of subjectivity. Wesley just popped in the chat. Good morning, Wesley. Hope you had a spectacular Christmas vacation. Welcome back to the stream, bud. The stream is open. Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate. The Fan Upstate on YouTube, or The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Twitch. Join us. We are live all 4 hours, all 5 days of the week, unless we're not here. And then we're not, obviously. He said, would you say Indiana is in the best or most deserving 12 teams? Wesley, the answer to me is yes. The answer to me is yes. And here's why. They had on their schedule at the beginning of the year, they had Michigan, the reigning, defending, undisputed 2023-24 college football playoff national champions. Indiana can't do a damn thing about the fact that Michigan had the drop-off that they had. They had on their schedule Washington, the 2023-24 college football national championship runners-up. There is nothing that Indiana can do about the fact that that team bit a bullet and got bad real fast because they lost their head coach. They lost their starting quarterback, who was a Heisman guy. They lost their running backs. They lost their wide receivers. They lost everybody. But they were scheduled. We can have all the complaints in the world about Indiana. They played the worst schedule of any playoff team. Yes, they did. They played the easiest schedule of any playoff team. Yes, they did. They lost the one good game that they had to play against Ohio State, and it was a blowout. The score is a hell of a lot closer on the final scoreboard. The score was a hell of a lot closer than it was if you watched that game. I agree with all those things. I also know that Indiana's average margin of victory was like 40 points. So it's not their it is not their fault. The conference schedule is what the conference schedule is, right? We all agree with that. The schools don't set their conference schedule. The conference does. That's why at the end of the SEC championship game, when Georgia won, they got the first round bye, and they put the camera on Kirby Smart, and they said, hey, Kerb, what's this mean for the Dogs? You know what Kirby Smart said? He said it means we get to go on and get some rest. And he looked Greg Sankey, who would not look back at him, He stared a hole in the back of Greg Sankey's head, and he said, Greg and his boys in his office sent us on the road over and over and over and over and over and over again. And now we get to go home and rest a little bit. That's because the schools don't set their conference schedule. So what do you want Indiana to do? Is this a metric? And don't get me wrong. I understand what some of you are already firing up those text messaging fingers to send a text to 71307. Start your text with Fan FAN. To say, Rob, doesn't this incentivize schools not, this is what Nick Saban said, not scheduling tough out-of-conference games? The answer is, yeah. Yeah, it does. Sure does. It sure does. Here's the thing. It's kind of been like that since we had the beginning of the playoffs, hasn't it? Hadn't it? Hadn't it? Especially for SEC and Big Ten schools. I wouldn't argue Big Ten. Big Ten's not that good. Big Ten's top heavy. I've been saying that the whole time. But you get the point. Would I say Indiana is best or most deserving? I would say that Indiana did what they were asked to do against whomst they were asked to do it against. And they earned a shot. Because again, you are throwing best or most deserving, Wesley. And I understand it because that's the way that the conversation has been structured. But I do not, this is just the personal opinion of one Rob Brown, I do not believe that best and most deserving necessarily need to be separated. I think I can look at college football programs and I can put those two terms or those two phrases, whatever you want to call them, together. I think you can be both or neither or none. And so when I look at Indiana, do I think Indiana was one of the best college football teams at the end of the year? I would say based on a lot of metrics, and I'm not just talking like Kirk Herbstreit was complaining about, oh, they had 11 wins. You're right. They had 11 wins. I think when I looked at Indiana, I saw a team that, yes, they had one of the weakest schedules in college football, and they beat the hell out of just about everybody. They beat the hell out of just about everybody. And I think there's something to be said for that. They played one really good team in Ohio State. And they got waxed. Well, so did Tennessee now. So do we argue that Tennessee, the third best team in the SEC? Do we argue that Tennessee just wasn't one of the best 12? Did we get it wrong putting Tennessee in? Because if you got it wrong putting Indiana in based on the result, then you got it wrong putting Tennessee in. By definition, if you want to make the argument that Clemson and SMU and Indiana weren't in the best 12 and therefore should not have gone, then you have to make the same argument about Tennessee. And if you have to make the same argument against Tennessee, then what do we do? What do we do? Because the conversation specifically this morning, respectfully about, or I should say from South Carolina fans, the argument that is being made by people like Herbstreit and by some of y'all that are texting and calling the show over the past couple of weeks saying that the Gamecocks should be in, you are asking me to base the college football playoff 12 on the eye test. That's what you're asking. You're asking me to base who gets into the 12-team playoff based on the eye test. And if that is the case, then what is the point of playing regular season games anymore? Because remember, based on the eye test, Florida State was a top 10 team coming into this year. Based on the eye test. Based on learning what we know about teams, checking in on the preseason and before. By the way, before you hit me with the Rob, we should be doing away with preseason polls and all that. Okay, we can have that discussion. We can have that debate. But I do want to also point out that the same information available to the folks that make these polls and us as fans who do our rankings and all that is what Vegas uses to set their preseason over-under win total numbers. And if you ever go look at those, they're pretty damn close. They're pretty spot on. They kind of have to be, or Vegas loses a bunch of money. They're pretty spot on. And if they're pretty spot on, that means the eyeball test to some degree is worthwhile. But here's the thing. Often it's not. Again, Florida State's over-under win total coming into this year was set at 10.5, and they were a top 10 team. They ended 2-10 and very poorly. So maybe the eye test is an important part of the conversation, but not the only one. Well, I'll just look at them. I don't think they would. Okay, what you think would happen is irrelevant. That is why there is sports gambling. And that is why Vegas offers sports gambling, because they win a lot of money off of fans every year, because fans look at two teams and go, oh, eyeball test says this is going to happen. And it doesn't work. Doesn't work. That's kind of how it feels. Wesley said, I believe when you have that easy of a schedule, you have to prove yourself against the good teams you play, and they laid an egg. Tennessee beat a good team. That's the difference. Okay. All right. So who are you replacing Indiana with? Alabama? Alabama was the first team out. Team that put up 3 points against a 6-6 Oklahoma team. Team that lost on the road at Vanderbilt. Is that the team you're replacing Indiana with? They beat a good team. Okay, well, they lost to a couple of really bad teams. So do we knock them out? Texas didn't beat anybody. Who was Texas's best win in the regular season? Texas A&M, who also was not a team that got in, right? You see what I'm saying, Wesley? Like, you can make that argument. And I'm not saying your argument is bad. What I'm saying is you can make these arguments, and there's every argument you're going to make, there's an argument against it too. The problem is all of this just rolls around in subjectivity, which means all we can do is, and this is why I've been saying the whole time, expand the selection committee to 50 members, expand it to 100 members, expand it to 1,000 members, and let's let a bunch of people vote, and let's just let the chips fall where they may every year. That way, everybody, you can't have a bias. You got 13 people in a room. You can create an inherent bias, especially when they're all in the room watching these games together and they're all campaigning for who they think should be in and should be out. We should have 1,000 trusted members of the college football media. And hell, golly, if we go to this system, I'll even let the fans have a vote. But 1,000 members to set up who's in and who's out. We got to go to a last break. We're way late. I love college football. This is fun. We're going to keep this conversation going. Wesley, I'll keep coming back to that here in just a minute. The rest of you guys, join us on the live stream, facebook.com/TheFanUpstate. The Fan Upstate on YouTube. The Fan Upstate is available on both of those platforms. The Rob Brown Show available on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. We'll keep this conversation going. I want your thoughts. After round number one, do you think the playoffs are flawed? Or like me, do you think the 12 test teams went in, but just the four better teams that played this weekend ended up winning? Because that's kind of what it looks like to me. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. Quick segment to end this hour. We'll do our sports flash. We'll take a break. And then we're back with the water cooler cheat sheet. Top three sports stories that you need to know to get your day started. That's coming up here in just a little while from now. So we're wrapping up this conversation. Round number one, we had four blowouts in the opening round. All four home teams blew out all four road teams in round number one. My argument has been that does not make the selection committee wrong. And here's the thing, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The argument that is being made by so many of you of, well, you know, South Carolina, Alabama, Ole Miss, they would have gone to Notre Dame. They would have gone to Penn State. They would have gone to wherever. And they would have put up a fight. They would have put up a better fight. And my response to that is, you don't really know that, do you? You don't really know that to be true. You think it to be true, and that's fine. But I'll be honest. There's a lot of us that thought that Indiana, SMU, Clemson, who am I leaving out? Tennessee. So I thought Tennessee was going to get the outright upset, to be honest with you. I thought Tennessee was going to win outright on the road at Ohio State. What we think has to be taken into consideration, but what we think also has to be supported by what happens on the field. And I don't think you can just eliminate results. I think it has to be taken into different spots, right? And I think that one of the things that happens in this conversation is that we focus so much on what a team is at the end of week 14 that we do not consider what we saw from weeks 1 through 8, right? The team that South Carolina was against Clemson in rivalry weekend was a hell of a lot different team than the team we saw early in the season, right? A hell of a lot different than the team we saw early in the season. And I think, at least to me, again, it is a very subjective conversation. It is all subjective. But subjectively speaking, in my ever so humble opinion, to me, your resume for the entire season matters. Your resume from week one through conference championship game matters. And while you guys are right, Indiana did not play a tough schedule. With the exception of Ohio State on the road, a place, by the way, where Tennessee just got their asses kicked too. With that exception, Indiana beat everybody else and for the most part, beat them convincingly. Beat them convincingly. Now, you can absolutely make the argument, and frankly, you should because it's a damn good argument. If Lenore Sellers stays healthy against LSU, South Carolina's probably 10-2. And if South Carolina's 10-2, they're in the playoffs. But you didn't. And you got smoked by Ole Miss. You got. It's unfortunate, but you got God. Texas A&M. Alabama. If Alabama doesn't lose a stupid game on the road against Vanderbilt, they're in. If they don't go lay an absolute egg against Oklahoma, they're in. And here's the thing. Before you go, well, it's one game. Rob, you're holding what? I'm not holding one game. I'm holding 3 games against you. Here's the other thing I'd be confident in saying. Had Indiana lost one more game, and it would have been a stupid loss, but had they lost one more game, I'd have knocked them out with 2 losses. Honestly. Had they lost another game, I'd have knocked them out with 2 losses. And I, the guy who's notoriously pushed back on this SEC and everybody else narrative, even if it is kind of true this year, I would have knocked a 2-loss Indiana team out and put a 3-loss South Carolina team in. But they didn't. And the resume is the resume from the year. Not from the last few weeks when a team has reached its final form. Wesley says, I get your point for sure, but that's why I think the best and deserving are different. 9 out of 10 people would say Alabama and South Carolina are better than Indiana. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah, probably, Wesley. Probably. But see, here's the other part of the conversation, and this is the part that I think needs to get more time. Here's the part I think needs to get more time. With all the benefits that you get from being in the SEC, more money, more resources, more dollar bills, which leads to better facilities, etc. There comes a step up in competition too, and that's on you. That's on you. It's harder to win. I don't disagree, but you also have resources that make it easier to run a football team, right? Like teams in other conferences don't get what you get at Alabama, don't get what you get at South Carolina in terms of SEC money. I like to bring everything back to me because I'm an egotistical butthead. I work in a very, very cutthroat industry. Anybody in my job will tell you, it's cutthroat. People will stab you in the back, smile in your face one day and stab you in the back the next. I've had it happen to me many times, okay? I do my best not to play in the politics. That's why it's taken me 17 years to finally make it to a market that I love and that treats me well. Because I don't stab in the back, but most people I work with will. Not here, in general, in the industry. The point here, though, is when you get to a market that has a big-time job for you, the competition level goes through the roof, right? I fight for my life here on a daily basis in Greenville, South Carolina. And it's not to say I have any concern about my boss coming down here and pink slipping me one day. What I'm saying is I know there's a lot of people who want my job and come at me every day. And if I ever slip, then I could get pink slipped. So I grind every day. That's why I work 19 jobs. That's why I try to get out there as much as I can. I have, however, resources to do the job here that a guy sitting at his house doing a podcast trying to take my job doesn't have. So the job's harder, and there's more responsibilities and more is expected of me to turn in a great show every day, but I also have more resources to do that than the guy doing the pod. He's got to turn in a good quality product to take my job with less resources and access than I have to do it. In South Carolina and Alabama, yeah, it's tougher. You got a tougher run of it in the SEC, but you also have easier resources to get there and get it done. Yeah, I would say Alabama are indeed better than Indiana, but did they do more over the course of 12 regular season games to earn that? And this is where the fight is. Colt checks in on the stream, says eye test means how are they playing at the end of the season, not what they were ranked at the beginning of the season. Listen, if you want to do away with preseason rankings, Colt, to make that irrelevant, I'm good with that. Honestly, it's never going to happen. Because the networks love to be able to say, week one, number two, Ohio State, takes on number seven, India. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a sales pitch, for sure. I'm good with getting rid of those preseason rankings. But until we do, this is kind of is what it is. But I am going to push back on how are they playing at the end of the season. To me, what you do at the beginning of the season matters too. How you play in weeks 1 through 4 through 8 through 12 through 14, it all matters to me. Your season-long resume, not just what you are at the end of the year. All right, we'll bring this back up later in the show. We got plenty more we need to get to. I got your water cooler cheat sheet, top three sports stories you need to know when we come back here in just a minute from right now. And then let's keep this conversation rolling. Why not? Let's get into the games themselves as well. All that coming up on the Rob Brown Show. All that coming up on the Fan Upstate. Yes, Rob Brown is going to do your sports flash today. You are ever so welcome. A 30-24 loss to the Washington Commanders has pushed Atlanta's NFC South title hopes to the final week of the season. Michael Penix Jr. threw for 223 yards, a touchdown, and a pick, and Bijan Robinson added 90 and a pair of tutties on the ground. But Jaden Daniels' 3 touchdown passes sealed the W for Washington. Atlanta is a game behind Tampa for the division, meaning the Buccaneers must lose and Atlanta must win in Week 18, or the Buccaneers will claim their 4th straight divisional title. The Carolina Panthers deactivated a handful of players for the week, a few more for the season, including running back Chuba Hubbard, hours before a 48-14 loss to the Buccaneers. Bryce Young threw for 203 yards and a pair of touchdowns, but with only backups available, the Panthers rushed for only 39 yards on the ground. Tampa quarterback Baker Mayfield threw for 359 yards and 5 touchdowns. Tampa rushed for 202 yards in the game. And Eagles running back Saquon Barkley became just the 9th player in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season after crossing the mark during a 167-yard day and a 41-7 win over Dallas. Barkley needs just 101 more yards to break Eric Dickerson's single-season rushing record.